Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Hey, hey, hey. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen. Dennis Dick with you this morning on our show today. We're going to talk about this big after-hours buyer in Bank America, Boeing consolidating a little bit. They also have a ratings change this morning, earnings from Tilray, some other interesting ratings as well to Domino's and iRobot. And we're going to talk about buybacks with our guest at 8:35. He's Michael Schoonover, Chief Operating Officer of Catalyst Funds and the Portfolio Manager of the Catalyst Buyback Strategy Fund. That'll be at 8:35. Joel, what is the word here in the overnight session?
Green on the screen once again, up 10.75 handles, just off the high of the session. 28.53 is your pre-market high, pre-market low. Just below your close of 40.5, which was the high close of the move here. And on the daily, Spencer, go show them on the dailies. There's nothing up here until 2,900, folks. Really no daily resistance. The only thing stopping us would be our average daily ranges, which is at just about 26 handles in the S&Ps. Moving on, crude, another good day on the supply cuts. Knocking on the door is $60. We've been talking about the 50% retracement from the high at 78.42 down to the low 42.96. That comes in at 60.77, so that's a big area we've been talking about for a while. Gold up 670 at 1302, good day for the gold bugs. Silver up nearly 8 cents here at 1540. And Bitcoin enthusiasts are praying to get this thing over 4,000. I'm keeping an eye on $5 in the GBTC. It's just hanging at resistance. We'll see if it can bust through. Triple D, how are you doing this morning in this pre-market trade?
Pretty good. It's actually quite quiet considering we're just up here again. I mean, it seems like every morning we come in here, it's Groundhog Day again. Bulls in full control. We're up another $1.25 on the SPY. I mean, this is just a Groundhog Day. It keeps going up.
Yep, and you can't fight the trend. Do you want to talk a little?
I'm staying bullish, keeping the bull hat on. If you'd give me those hats, you'd see that bull hat just staying on every day and hiding this mop on my head.
Maybe we should get a hat. When do you need that all time? You said by June.
Did we make a bet?
Begrudgingly,
I said by the start of summer. I said one season. So basically, we're going to be at the start of spring. When spring officially starts? Because I'm done with this cold. It's 21 degrees here this morning in the Metro D. When is the first day of spring?
I think it's gotta be soon. I think it's very soon here.
In a day or two, isn't it?
Let's look it up right now. I don't know.
I think it's March 21st. Isn't it?
It is March 20th. March tomorrow. It is tomorrow.
20th? Well, tomorrow is the first day of spring, so I'll look forward to that so we can get away from this 21-degree weather. But I said the first day of summer, by the first day of summer, we'll be at new all-time highs. I think I'm easily going to get there. We got to get another 100 S&P points to go, but the way we're trending, we'll be there in 2 weeks.
Do you know why I always why I say March 21st instead of March 20th? Why March 21st always sticks out in my mind?
Because it's somebody's March birthday. Madness. It's someone's birthday.
It's actually, Spencer, you get a raise. Actually, in my third grade class, three kids had their birthday on March 21st. David Tarrant, Kelly Viewage, and Jill Morgan. Happy birthday.
Important information for all our listeners out there.
Well, you got triple treats.
Can we give them a happy birthday? We'll give them a happy birthday in 2 days.
Yeah, you get triple treats, though, right?
Triple treats? I've never heard of that. Is that what happened? So the teacher gets triple. Everybody got you treats on your birthday in school?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know in your elementary school, everyone brought in Tim Hortons donuts, but
and mini hockey sticks.
But I always remember that day. But first day of spring is Texas Linda's wedding anniversary.
Happy anniversary!
And I just a little
holidays here.
Yeah. Well, no, we got a lot going on. But let's get to the markets, Dennis. Let's just talk about the after-hours trading a little bit. Someone had to own Bank America.
Well, they were buying a hand over fist last night. BAC, it traded up. How high did we get? I was kind of throwing up when it started to go up to 30.20 because obviously I probably shorted way earlier than that. But how high did we end up getting BAC last night?
Boom. In BAC, I did see a 30.20 print. Let me see if it did any more than that.
It was right near the top. It was close to 30.20 if it wasn't.
It's 30.19 was the high. And I know you. I didn't tell you this like on the pre market show. You were making fun of all the people on Twitter. They were all.
Fun of people. I was just saying there was a lot of people saying where we were breaking out through. There was a lot of people partying on Twitter last night with the Bank of America. I'm like, what's the news? I even asked on Twitter. I was like, I don't see the news here. It's trading up 1.5% here after hours, and I cannot find the news. This appears to just be somebody who just wants in and needs to be in. So that's always a good sign, I mean, for the stock. The stock had a great day. Financials, banks had a great day yesterday. So it's a big day. Bank America is going to challenge the $30 level here today and in all likelihood take it out. Now, if you're new to the show, you'll be saying, what are you talking about? It's already taken it out. And it's not taking it out until it's taken it out during the regular session. I can tell you there's some size in the book it's got to chew through. So I would actually be very surprised if it opens over $30. I think it will take it out. I think it'll probably take it out right after 9:30. But I'll probably be trying to cover my short because I am short, full disclosure, Bank America into the opening print. And I don't think the opening print's going to be above 30.
I don't know if this happens very often, but we're on opposite sides of a trade here.
Oh, you got the calls?
Yeah. Well,
I like being long Bank America first swing, but as of last night, when it was up 1.5%, it was just up too much.
Exactly. And the reason, Spencer, can you pull up the daily here on Bank of America? You know, this is one of my absolutely favorite formations. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, like nine highs at like 29.70. So when that went through 29.70 yesterday, if you're ever going to buy Bank America, I did. So we'll see. Of course, I didn't go out. I don't go out too far on this. But I don't know. We get a nice run into the 30 handle. Maybe I can sell the 30.50s against it, a couple strategies. And I like it that it's not gap opening that much. Yesterday's high, 29.96. So, I'm a little afraid of gaps here. But clearing 30 on the dailies, if you're trading Bank America, which probably only me and Dennis do, besides the people that trade like 1,500 million a day, there is a pair of highs from October at 30.13, 30.19. That's exactly was the pre-market high. Elizabeth, we don't have a pre-market show. That's when we get together. Dennis,
talk about what we're going to talk about on the pre-market show.
Yeah.
It's Spencer, Joel, and me on a Skype call for 15 minutes just saying, okay, here's the rundown. Here's what we're going to talk about on the show. It's our preparation for what you're listening to live right now.
It usually, devolves
about 10% of it.
Usually devolves into something unrelated to the show.
We usually start talking about Joel's preschool friends there on their birthdays.
Third grade. I didn't talk about my physical therapy for my shoulder this morning, but we'll save that for another day.
I'll tell you, though, I like the bank. The banks are hot now. The banks have been moving. J.P. Morgan. So it's not just Bank America bid up. All the banks are bid up here this morning. It looks like they're setting up to have a decent day. And we've always talked, when the TLT is down, Bank America and the banks are higher. Kind of been just no correlation there lately. The TLT has been doing its own thing, just hanging out. And the banks have been catching a bid no matter what. So keep that in mind as well. Other things being equal, when it's normal markets, usually the TLT has a big influence on the financials and on the banks. And as the TLT goes down, the banks often do move the other way and go up. But in this case, banks are just looking hot. And I do, even despite being short Bank America for a day trade just overnight, I still, like I said, I'm going to be probably covering this on the opening print. I still like the banks long here because the trend is your friend and the trend is up right now.
And boy, oh boy, I tell you, the other thing it's a little bit puzzling here and it's getting asked about, Fed on Wednesday. I mean, they're not taking rates up and they're not taking them down. They're just going to say data dependent. So it's interesting that, you're getting this run ahead of the Fed. Is it a Fed meeting or is it just an announcement tomorrow? So But I don't think rates are going. I don't think rates are going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere at the next meeting. It's just a matter of what's the tone. Are we getting a little more hawkish? Or are we going to stay a little bit more dovish? And obviously, we know that they're data dependent, but they're also market dependent. When the markets start moving up to highs and stuff, they get a little bit more aggressive on that other end too, putting more bullets in the chamber. So keep that in mind. I would not be surprised if they did throw out one little hawkish comment there. And that would actually be good for the banks and might spook the financials. And maybe that's what people are speculating. Maybe they're buying it ahead of the Fed, saying, hey, maybe, you know, the market's come back a long ways here. Maybe they are going to get a little bit more hawkish in their commentary. And that's obviously the banks want higher rates. So keep that in mind. Right now, though, people are speculating that whatever the Fed says is going to be good for the banks because the banks are moving up ahead of tomorrow's commentary.
And go for the W, rotation, rotation, rotation.
Oh, yeah.
If you're selling something, you're buying something else here. And boy, oh, boy, let's go to one of the reports that we had off the close and after the close. And that was Tilray traded up $1.77. How'd they do, Spencer?
Yeah, volatile after hours for Tilray here. They report yesterday. Remember, the first report since cannabis was legalized in Canada there. Q4 EPS, 33-cent loss versus a 12-cent loss estimate. Not sure how much that really matters considering they're in growth mode, obviously. Sales, $15.5 versus $14.4 million. So they beat the sales estimate, and on a year-over-year basis, the amount of kilograms sold was just ridiculous growth. They sold about 2,000 kilograms worth of product versus 694 kilograms in the same quarter a year ago. So just selling way more product and making money. Or not making money, but on their way.
I mean, it's the only one that hasn't participated in the massive pot rally this year. All of them. We could go Aphria to come back off the low. CGC, CRON are up significantly since January. And Tilray is down, or it's at least flat since January. It was around $70 when we started. Here we are 2.5 months into the year, and it's pretty much the same price, say $74 this morning, where every other pot stock is up 50%, 80%. My Aurora Cannabis, the only one that I own in my investment portfolio, that is almost doubled this year. It started the year around $5. It's over 10 now, 10, 15. So, you know, and that's been a good one, and that's the one I've owned, so I've been lucky to pick one of the best ones.
You did.
But, yeah, but, and that was just, I don't know why, it was multiple reasons why, and it never got an investment from anybody either, so I always thought that was a wild card, where you obviously saw Kronos and CGC have gotten some level. CGC got the big investment from Constellation. I just feel like Aurora is a good run company, and eventually is going to get a big investment from somebody as well. And we recently had, what was the news last week, I forget who was putting their money into Aurora Cannabis.
Oh, Nelson Peltz,
yeah. And that's what's really kickstarted it here, too. It was around just 820, and since then, we're going straight up here, too. So that's helping, too. I'm still long ACB, Trend's still your friend. You know, I don't know. Once I double my money sometimes in a stock, I sometimes sell half, sometimes do that, depending how I feel about it. But, you know, if it gets, you know, lofty valuation, sometimes I sell half, and then I'm completely playing with the house's money. This is not quite a double for me yet because I didn't buy the absolute bottom at five, but I think I'm getting close. I bought in Canadian dollars, and I think I'm in Canadian around seven. So that would be the equivalent of Canadian 14. So you're at 10, 16 times 0.3. You're probably getting close. I'm probably up 80 or 90%. So if I double my money in this, I might sell half.
Two things. One, kudos to Kenny Glick, who came on the show a couple of weeks ago and talked about Village Farms. That's been a monster. But Dennis, a buddy of mine sent one over to me, but you probably won't touch it because it's an OTC stock. But
what you got?
MMNFF.
We know that.
Joel, I've mentioned that to you before.
Yeah, we've talked about that. That's that Mad Men, right?
Mad Men.
How many M's are in there? MMNFF?
MMNFF. Yeah. I mentioned that.
And that's traded in Canada under a different symbol, too.
Yeah, it is.
Do you know what the Canadian symbol is?
I think it's much shorter. Let's see here. It is in Canada, MMEN.
MMEN. Okay, I'm just looking it up in Canada there, too. It'd be cleaner chart for me. Okay, so $4.11 in Canada there. Ramp the chart.
Yeah, I mean, it's It's a newer stock. It's on the move here. So a little lead on the bone. Can you do a little of your fundamental research on that today? Or because it's OTC, you won't?
I've actually looked in this company before. So it's just not that easy to get information. And again, it's not on the main Toronto exchange. They call it the Pure Exchange there, where there's some small, basically over-counter American in Canada, too. But what's the chart look like? Have we seen the chart?
It looks good. I mean,
it
hasn't run. That's why I think it
looks good. I don't know if it looks that necessarily makes it look good. It makes it look like a lagger. Looks like,
yeah,
no,
that's what I'm all about, man. Buy the laggards. They
buy low, sell high, same stock again and again.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a newer issue, but drill down and do some research on it. As a piece, up 11 handles, itching towards the high of the sessions here. And I guess, is Taco worth talking about? They had earnings after the close.
Well, we could do these pretty fast because I don't want to get too on these smaller companies. We've got a lot. I have 25 stocks to talk about. We can say, give us the talk earnings that Joel just mentioned. It is taking out $10, so it doesn't look good.
All right, well, we didn't really talk about Tilray at all. I gave you the numbers, and then we kind of...
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is what happens when Joel leads the show. We go on tangents, and we talk about his childhood friends.
Birthdays. The spike down initially on the number to 67.10, you would have just had blind faith and put an order out at 67.57. That was your March 11th low. Didn't get to the low of the move. Then you had a big spike up, double.
It reversed real fast.
Yeah,
like
really
it was traded down for a couple minutes, and then they just bought it, and they bought it so fast. And then it went to flat, and then it blasted up. So basically, rallied like $9 in a matter of like a couple minutes. So I don't know if something was said. They dove a little bit deeper, but it traded down initially for a few minutes and then blasted off.
Old triple top is 73.75. So as long as it stays above there, I call this a breakout to the upside. I'm not sure if you're going to get this unchanged on the session. Actually, pretty technical this morning, too. Your high from the 7th was 76.13, and your high in the pre-market trading is a little bit above that at 76.70. So even some crazy action, but pretty technical for Tilray.
All right. Let's go down to the reports from this morning while we're doing earnings. DSW is getting the beats here. We've also got Michaels rallying a little bit. Scrapbook store that sells scissors for $30 a pair. That's trading up 7%. So give us those two. We'll do them together.
All right. DSW, Q4 EPS, 7 cent loss versus a 4 cent gain estimate. Sales of 843 versus 829. $1 million, so an EPS miss and a sales beat for DSW. Stock is down this morning, as you can see on the chart. I'll do Michaels too, and we can do the charts back to back. Michaels Q4 EPS $1.44 versus $1.42. Sales of 1.78 billion is in line with the estimate there. So a EPS beat and a inline sales for the quarter in Michaels. They also gave guidance. It was light for the quarter, the Q1 EPS guidance, and the fiscal year EPS guidance was, it was fine.
What is their guidance? How much are they supposed to make?
For the quarter, 28 to 33 cents. For the fiscal year, they guided $2.34 to $2.46. So mid-$2 range for the
fiscal
year.
Holy, they make money. They're going to make $2.40 trading for $12. But you know what? It's been a value trap because it keeps falling there. And I don't know if this is just going to be another rally into that. But, man, that company makes some money. When you sell scissors for $30 a pair and you're probably buying them for 25 cents, I mean, that's good margins. I don't know who's buying them all. And I joke a little bit there because they probably have some scissors that are cheaper than there. But that story where I went into Michaels, I've never been into one, but I need a pair of scissors for whatever reason. I don't know why. And Michaels was right there. I think I was probably cutting something maybe for my kid in the car or something. I was like, oh, it was Michaels right there. I'll go in and get a pair of scissors. And I could not find a pair of scissors for under $6. And one pair of scissors that was on the shelf was 30. I was like, what? I was like, I was expecting to come into the store and buy scissors for $1. So anyways, unbelievable, the pricing in there. Crazy stuff. But whatever. People are apparently buying it because they're making money.
People do crafts, Dennis. You don't, but people
do. Why do you need $30 scissors? The dollar scissors from Dollar Store are going to work just as well, are they not?
I don't know.
Are the $30 scissors that much sharper?
Long DG, I don't know.
The dollar store scissors. All my scissors in my house, I think, are dollar store scissors. Well, maybe not. My wife does. I better ask her, make sure she doesn't shop at Michael's, because that would be really bad if we owned $30 scissors.
Okay. Trading into highs in the session up 81 cents. Really can't see much here on the dailies until you get to $13. I see some highs just above that. 1301 was your March 8th high. That would be the next target for me on the upside. Showing a lot of strength here, so I don't know if we're going to get down to yesterday's closing price at 1179. I think that would be a bargain.
Did we do DSW?
No, I was going to go DSW next, Joel.
Yeah, so you gave us the numbers there. They were weak. The stock is breaking down. It's interesting here because you're getting to a major level of support. We bounced multiple times in late December, just under $23. We've come this far. Why not test that low, Joel, $22.74? We're at $23.62. I think we test it. The question is, do we take it out or do we bounce off it the first time? $22.74.
Oh, man, but just look at the trend going into this. How many I mean, I've said this before. I mean, shorts maybe taking some money off the table. That's why, you know, it may not get there. It's only 75 cents away, but that's a great target. Let's see here. You've had one update in March. So shorts on the right side of this one. Pre-market low comes in at 23.15. I'd have to call from that December low up to the pre-market low, 23.15, just a buy zone. And that's what I would, if I was short to cover, going long, we'll see what happens for a day or two. But big windfall for shorts here.
Jump over just to the ratings parade here for a minute. There's about three, four interesting ones here. Let's go to Boeing first and just talk it, because this has been all over the news. It keeps making the same lows in the same area. It is like there is just a fire in the 265 to 267 area that will not go away. Yesterday, again, it gets down to 367.20. It's downgrade today at Argus, not going down on it. They are defending that level like crazy. I don't know. Like, it all depends. Like I said, there's major headline risk here. If they come out and they're at fault, I think get a whoosh happening, and I think it's leaning towards that, but we're defending that level, so you can't argue with support. Support is support until it's broken. We got good support 365 to 367.
Yeah, you see a lot of different reports, though, but I like the consolidation. Bulls and bears are squaring up here. Yeah. A nice inside day. Let the vol come down a little bit, and we'll see. The only reason I just wouldn't rush out and be in long this thing is I just don't think there's going to be a quick resolution, to what happened. So, we'll just have to keep that in mind. But you cannot argue with the support. 363.33 has been the low of the move. Nice gap fill from its prior earnings report. So if you didn't know the news and you looked at the chart and you saw it come down, you would say, hey, it filled the gap from earnings and finding maybe some institutional buyers. It has to be institutions.
It's kind of textbook, Joel.
Yeah.
If you didn't have any fundamental news, you'd be like, this is textbook. Fill the gap. You have all that old resistance. If you look back from, late January, I'm talking, when you made a high at 366.94, 367.78, 367.31. So you have the older resistance becomes new support trick happening. You probably could argue almost a 50% retracement on the move. I mean, if you take it from January at 320 up to 450, that's 130 points. Knock off 70. I mean, you're in that realm here too. Everything sets up technically quite well to say, hey, we might have a bottom here. My fear is that the headline comes in and the thing whooshes down on you through that support, though. And that's why I'm not striking, because I just see too much headline risk. But from a technical perspective, there's some major support here.
In the chat, we're getting a comment here. How do you pronounce that? How do you pronounce it?
Sophocles. Okay. Hey, guys. Sophocles. Come on.
Sophocles.
The philosopher. Fletcher's good.
Is that like a philosopher from 17th century?
No, that was Socrates.
Socrates. Oh, Sophocles. Where do you get your handle from?
Spencer knows like that.
Oh my! You guys are driving me crazy here. Sophocles is a philosopher. My gosh,
what is Sophocles?
Sophocles is a philosopher.
No, that's Socrates.
I know it's Socrates. He says he's a Greek poet. He says you're wrong. It's a Greek poet. That he wasn't a philosopher.
Poet, philosopher. He was a person. Okay, you guys, come on.
Well, as a person, yeah, but we were saying you were saying philosopher. They're saying he's a Greek poet.
You guys don't even know who he is. I'm telling you, he's real.
From what century?
What century?
He's real right now? Like, he's alive right now?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, we're done.
We're lost.
Can you be on the show?
Me and Joel have been around this Earth. I've been around this planet 43 times. Joel's been around for 70. So you got to really explain stuff to us old men here.
Okay, moving on. Sophocles is as real as Socrates, okay?
Okay.
Establish that.
It's the same thing.
Three ancient Greek
It is Socrates. It is.
Wrote tragedies.
I know. I took a philosophy class.
I took one, too. I almost failed it, though. I wasn't good with philosophy.
Yeah.
I should have showed up to class more often. All right. We really digress here now. I don't even remember what we were talking about. What were we talking about? Bring us back.
Boeing.
I thought we were done talking about Boeing.
Nope.
You changed the subject to Sophocles.
No, because he was going to...
Because they mentioned that they took a half position in it.
You know what? We were talking ratings before that, and that's how he went to Boeing. So, bro, we've got this back now here. And I wanted to go iRobot, because iRobot catching the downgrade this morning from Needham. It's always interesting when you get these stocks that have been on our run, get a downgrade, because often we see these stocks go on the run, they get upgrades. Well, this one is obviously a contrarian call here, because the trend is straight up on your Zumba maker, and it's going down here this morning. Roomba.
I'd be careful on this one. I don't know where this is going to be a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, but man, oh man, what did they do to Roku? I mean, the chart looks a little different. Roku came off a high and then a bad day, but man, oh man, this is a thin stock. I don't know. I don't think I'd be long at any point today. It's down to $1.91. I think this thing could easily, if it goes with the pattern that these other sell signals have been, there's a pair of lows at 120.70, and then you drop to 118.62. So that's what I'm looking at for this one.
I like that low too, that 118.62.
Yep.
This hasn't had a downgrade for a while. This isn't one I'm going to say is going to pull back a buck or two and hold. This can actually get ugly here. So just because if they're ringing register, people get nervous. There's so many people sitting on profits. So that's why I'm saying I think you could see this down $4 or $5 here on this. It's only down $1 here right now. And I don't know if it's going to just whoosh down there. But you got a downgrade that's contrary and call. Those sometimes can move it. So I'm actually surprised it's only down $1 here right now.
And you know who gave us this stock in the 60s?
Who's that?
70, Gene.
I know. I wanted to buy this too. I don't remember Gene giving it to us. I would have bought it maybe then, but it actually came all the way down. It was in the 60s and ran to 110 and then gave us another shot at the end of the year down at 73. That was a shot under $80. Now it's back up here, $127. So it was one I had on my list for a while to look at as a possible investment opportunity. Never pulled the trigger on this one. Should have.
All right.
Bank America under $30.
All right, Dennis, that's enough out of you.
Domino's Pizza catches an upgrade from JP Morgan. That's the best pizza out there, chain pizza. I'll say it right now. And the stock has been quiet here for a while. So does this kickstart DP Zebra?
Well, apparently so. Up 560. Your initial spike here on the news took it to 250.97. Oh, it had to go higher than that. Oh, yeah. Come on. 250.97 now. Yeah, 250.97. That is your pre-market high. I mean, this thing is waking up here after being in the doldrums. So not sure if you're going to get a chance to buy cheaper on the day. Former support, two highs at 248. So I don't know. You might get this pulls, but actually five highs at 248. So I'd like to see this back at 248 for a lower risk long. On the upside, your major resistance comes in. It's called 263. That area was a triple top after the gap down after earnings report. So wide numbers for a wide stock.
Flowers.com stock we haven't talked about probably in years on the show. 1-800-Flowers.com catching an upgrade from D.A. Davidson this morning.
Now.
And that stock... That's interesting, too. It's been kind of consolidating here for the better part of a month. But you know what? Trend is your friend. Overall trend is up here. Does this kickstart this one, FLWS?
Okay, FLWS. I was waiting for the symbol there. Bunching up, breaking out. I've got clear breakout over 1850 here, currently trading at 18.25. All kinds of support at 18. So we'll see. We'll see if we can take out. Actually, it's not 18.25. It's 1860 would be the major breakout to the upside here in FLWS.
What else do you got, Mr. Israel?
Well, the all-time high on flowers is $23 back in 1999. Excuse me.
Oh, wow. So, we come back. Look at this. Buy and hold works again. If you hold it for 20 years, you almost get your money back.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that long. And it's, I mean, maybe the old Valentine's Day push here. I'm not sure. But I do know that a long-term florist in our area closed down. So I don't know if everyone's just doing it online or not.
One more rating this morning, going through the list here. Let's see. Actually, we covered the main ones. There was a downgrade to Immunogen from JP Morgan to underweight IMGN. A downgrade from Capital One to Realty Income to underweight, ticker O. A downgrade to Yum Brands from JP Morgan to neutral.
Well, that one's interesting.
YUM. Let's look at Yum.
Yeah, let's look at the Yum. And Yum's been running too. I mean, a lot of things have been running, but this had a little bit of a reversal day yesterday. Had a strong open and then actually closed and then it got under $100, but did close above it. But now it's significantly under $100 with the downgrade here. What do you think of the technicals on this one?
Breaking out right here.
Well, it already broke out, but now it's
broke
coming
out
down.
And then downgrade. Ah, man,
breaking out. Is this a downgrade to buy, or is the trend gonna break here?
Boom. That's a tough call. I would just as long as the pre-market low holds 97.05, I still like it to the upside. It got a nice bounce off it. Nothing really. Do we have anything on the dailies there? 97.21, 96.75. So I'll give it a little bit more room here because I'd like to support at 97. And then you will see resistance if, in fact, you can get up to 10090. That was the all-time closing high on Friday, yesterday's high, to fill the gap. Well, that would be 99.91, 10024. So 97 to 100, maybe trading range for
you. Are you a James Bond fan?
Yeah.
When you quote the numbers when you go to the 100, makes me think that you like the 007.
Yeah.
Sean Connery, your man.
Well, you know my old Sean Connery story, right?
No. Can we do a time? It's a promise, 8:35.
No, right? No, real quick. He did the movie Diamonds Are Forever. He played craps. My dad was out in Vegas at the time, and the producers of the show asked my dad to teach Sean Connery how to play craps for the movie.
Your dad did everything. Your dad.
Spencer's getting tired.
The only
tired
bad call was that the McDonald's hamburgers wouldn't work and TV. Nobody would actually want to watch TV.
And who would sit there and watch a box on your living room floor?
I'm actually proud of Joel.
All right, this is a good time to go to our guest.
I'm proud of Joel. That was the quickest story you've ever told. But anyway, it is 8:35, so let's grab today's guest, Michael Schoonover from Catalyst Funds. We're going to talk about buybacks. Are they good? Are they bad? Are they
Dennis,
bad?
Be nice, Dennis.
I like buybacks.
We'll be right back here in a moment with Michael. And welcome back, everyone. We are now live with Michael Schoonover. He is a chief operating officer of Catalyst Funds and the PM of the Catalyst Buyback Strategy Fund. Michael, how's it going this morning?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me here.
Well, we have you on this morning to talk about buybacks. 2018 was a record year, both in terms of buyback authorizations and actual buybacks. I think over $1 trillion in authorizations last year and about $800 billion of share buybacks, and 2019 is already on pace to break that record. What's the deal, Mike?
Yeah, so what we found is following the tax cuts and job acts that companies are really seeing some excess cash available. That's both from reduced corporate tax rates as well as the ability to repatriate overseas cash at favorable rates. And with that, as you said, last year, companies stepped up and announced about $1.08 trillion in buybacks. That surpassed the previous record, roughly around $850 billion, and that was about in 2016. So it's interesting to see that in terms of this year already. It's pretty surprising. As of March 15th, we've had 235 companies announce more than $253 billion in share repurchases. That compares to about just $235 billion at this point last year.
Are there particular sectors that we're seeing more or less buybacks in? Or is it a more popular thing to do for tech companies or consumer, you know, or how does it break down by sectors?
Yeah, great question. So in terms of last year and this year, technology companies certainly are leading the way. You know, that makes sense if you think about it. They tend to have pretty good margins, good excess free cash flow. And additionally, they're some of the companies with the most overseas profits that they can repatriate and then return that capital to shareholders. However, outside of technology, the story is a little bit different this year. And what's leading me to believe that this year will continue to be a stronger year than 2018 is just the increased diversification. So last year, you know, financials and healthcare were number two and number three. However, this year we have discretionary industrials and then surprisingly energies following up as number four. So it was one of the smallest sectors and a sector that really didn't do too much last year in terms of buyback, to see energy companies out there announcing buyback, as well as industrials companies, which were particularly impacted by the trade war last year, to see them announcing buybacks in a big way is pretty positive.
I want to, I'm sure you're aware that the SEC's Robert Jackson testified about this a couple weeks ago to Congress, just about the growing trend of buybacks and how they correlate to long-term performance. And he found a correlation between companies that buy their stock back tend to underperform in the long term. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it depends how you break down buybacks and look at them. You know, we're looking at announcements and when companies announce. If you look at companies that do follow through on the buybacks, oftentimes, especially over the long run, there's a number of companies that don't do buybacks for the right reason or that poorly execute their buybacks. So that's certainly something to keep in mind. But, you know, the research I've seen out there is relatively mixed in terms of announcements. The companies that announce and within a close time frame of that announcement, they've historically outperformed.
What about the fact that the SEC's research found that buybacks tend to coincide with insider selling? So the insiders are selling into and after these buybacks happen at these raised prices.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the things we also do here at Catalyst is insider buying and selling research, and we know quite a lot about that. You know, in terms of that coinciding with insider selling in general, I mean, I imagine a lot of it, I don't know the details of the research, but I do imagine a lot of it comes with stock option exercises. So if you have, you know, routine buybacks that are just for maintaining share count, for example, that would make a lot of sense. You know, what we look for are companies that are out there making unusual buybacks that are really trying to send a signal about their future expectations or their capital allocation strength. So, you know, companies that are announcing a 20% buyback, meaning they're going to buy back 20% of their shares, that's not usually a case where you see all the executives dumping into that. That's a case where you probably see insiders actually buying into that stock, because, you know, if the company can buy back 25% of its average daily volume under most cases, stock's probably going to move up in a pretty big way if they follow through with that.
What about the alternative? Obviously, if you're giving money back to shareholders, you can do buybacks, or you can actually give it out in the form of a raised dividend. Are you seeing, what are you seeing from the dividend side? Are you seeing a lot of companies raise dividends here as well? Are you tracking that?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I do see it in terms of, you know, when we look at buyback announcements, we, you know, literally read through thousands of news articles every year in terms of what companies are doing. It's pretty common that companies are increasing their dividend and their buyback and their investment, at least the ones that we like. You know, however, there is a growing trend for companies, especially in the recent years, moving away from dividends or special dividends into buybacks. And, you know, what I seem to gather from the insight from these executives is that they just simply like the flexibility of a buyback. For example, if you're in Apple shoes and you have over $200 billion in cash to return, you know, you could certainly have a huge dividend. But if you have a better investment opportunity that comes up, you know, the market typically punishes companies that cut their dividend. However, you can you see it all the time where companies have buyback plans and they just let that plan expire without acting on it, and the market doesn't really react at all. So, you know, it's been a way that companies see, you know, they're using it as an option. They can buy back the stock if there's not a better use of capital down the road. However, if there is, they can simply just repurpose that to investment, and they don't have to worry about the downside from that.
What are your thoughts just on, and you do see this sometimes, and maybe it's selective perception on my part, where, you know, if companies are doing well, they're obviously making a lot more money. That probably means their stocks are doing very well at this time. And that means, in all likelihood, they're maybe buying their shares a little bit too high. I mean, you can see in the event of like a Micron, which has cyclical earnings, and then they do a big buyback, and the stock's trading, you know, $55, $60 at that time. Now you see, you know, the cyclicalness of the business turns, and the stock starts coming down. Now they're not making as much money. What are your thoughts here? Just sometimes these companies seem to buy back their stocks at the highs.
Yeah, it's certainly something that investors that monitor buybacks need to be aware of, and something that we're particularly cautious with here too. You know, one of the things we like to look at is what companies have done in the past in terms of timing their buybacks, and did they make a decision? So, you know, I think on the other hand, if you look at Facebook when they had, you know, some periods of some adverse news coming out, as well as the market volatility last year, they actually stepped up their buybacks during periods where the stock was under pressure and supported. Or you have a Berkshire where they're only buying it back if valuations, you know, with what they believe within a reasonable range of intrinsic values. So you do have to monitor that closely. And overall, with so many buybacks happening and so many companies announcing buybacks, there's certainly always going to be cases where companies just don't time it well. And you should expect that, which is why we focus on the announcement, because these people certainly aren't always, they're experts on their companies, but they're certainly not experts on market cycles.
So how do we know then that a company is just sort of using a buyback as a way to prop up, you know, their stock and not as, you know, a real serious vote of confidence?
Yeah, one of the easiest things to do is actually, you know, it's very easy to look at a dollar value of a buyback and say, you know, that's big or small. But what investors really need to do is put it in terms of the percentage shares outstanding. So, you know, some of the most compelling buybacks we saw last year, if you have companies coming out like Restoration Hardware announcing 20% or 30% buybacks, or Asonic announcing a 20 to 30% buyback range, you know, those are a pretty compelling signal, right? Like we're so confident in our stock, we're going to buy back up to 20% of our outstanding shares. So when you look at it in terms of that, when you see these very large buybacks, you typically don't see these situations where it's just companies temporarily trying to prop up their stock. They really think there's something fundamentally wrong with their stock valuation, and will take advantage of that.
What about Joel, go for it.
This is a question I've been meaning to ask someone for a long time, and I surely hope you have the answer to it. I mean, when they're doing these buybacks, I mean, are they looking at the charts? I mean, do they have a skilled technician saying, hey, you know, obviously in IBM, the case they didn't have it, but I mean, is it just something that's timed, like we're going to buy, you know, so many shares this day, this day, this day, this day? Or, you know, if the stock's in trouble, do they come in, you know, and support it? Or do they, you know, do they find levels in the charts to take a look at?
Yeah, it's really a mix of all of those. Some companies are just buying back stock every single day, which certainly isn't the best way to execute your plan. Others, they use what's called an accelerated share repurchase program, where they coordinate with some sort of investment bank to go out there and buy a large amount of shares in a very short amount of time. Those are typically pretty well executed, and they typically are looking at technicals when they do those type of buybacks. And then there are companies where management does have some insight in when it's a good time to buy the stock, like Berkshire or even Facebook at certain times last year, where, you know, management seemed to do a pretty good job timing it when the stock was under pressure.
What about reform here? There have been a few proposals made. Bernie Sanders, Chuck Schumer have made public comments about needing to reform how companies do buybacks. Timothy Baldwin as well. Marco Rubio, just to name a few. Give us an idea of sort of where this reform stands and what you see actually happening, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this reform is just coming from, you know, the increase in buybacks following this tax cut, and in general, people trying to blame lack of investment on company buybacks. You know, when you look at some of these, these reform proposals and what's going out there, you know, the Schumer-Sanders proposal, looking at it, you know, just in terms of the minimum wage component and the sick time, you know, it certainly may make an impact on some companies like the Walmarts or the McDonald's of the world, but when you look at where most of the money was coming from in terms of the amount spent on buybacks last year, it's companies like Apple or Cisco or Google or Oracle. So in terms of those type of companies, you know, that proposal probably doesn't have much of an impact. And when you look at Rubio's proposal, certainly the trying to diminish the tax advantage of buybacks, and bringing them in line with ordinary income right away. That does take away one of the reasons that companies do choose buybacks. However, you know, I think with both of these proposals, it kind of misses the point, and that's companies are really trending to using buybacks as an option to return capital to shareholders, where they just don't get punished if they stop doing it. And, you know, a lot of what's really going on, you know, when you listen to these executives, is there's just a lot of political volatility. And that's one of the main reasons why you probably don't see as much investment as you would otherwise.
Question here from our chat about the upcoming buyback blackout period and how that affects volatility for short-term traders. Or do you have any insights there?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times companies before their earnings will have these buyback blackout periods where they're not allowed to actually go out there and buy back their stock. You know, you do see probably during these periods of time, especially with the large players out there like Apple, the world, where this really can have an impact on the overall stock market, and although in a very minor way, it certainly can happen. However, when you look at the how far, you know, a typical buyback announcement spread out or when companies execute on these, there's probably always some level of activity just given the sheer number of buybacks going on in any given year.
When a company announces a buyback, let's say they announce it during their, you know, an earnings report during, you know, a Q4, how long does that take to actually go follow through and finish that buyback and buy all those shares?
Yeah, some companies start executing right away. Others execute plans that are multi-year plans. So companies that are just routinely using a buyback, like in addition to a dividend, for example, they typically will execute relatively evenly throughout the course of multiple year period. Whereas companies that really are using the buyback because they believe their stock's undervalued, you'll typically see them come out right away and start buying back in a pretty big way. And a good example of that just from the end of last year was XPO Logistics, where a stock got hit on some news from a short seller. The company came out with a pretty large buyback, and it recovered relatively quickly from there, but still been under pressure. So it's certainly something you could trade on, but maybe not a good long-term investment.
Is that information disclosed? How do we know how long these buybacks last for?
Yeah, when companies come out and authorize their buyback, they typically have some sort of expiration period under the board will authorize it for 1 or 2 or 3 year periods. Some companies have their boards authorize it, so it's just an indefinite period, which is relatively unusual. There's usually some time frame in terms of when they'll be executing this buyback. And in addition, some companies that are planning to do a relatively aggressive share buyback, they may come out and also say that they plan to do an accelerated share repurchase program. So when you see a large buyback and an accelerated share repurchase program, that's probably something that's worth looking into a little further.
All right. And I know there's, you know, one more before I let you go. There's a general, you know, frustration, it seems like, just with the amount of share buybacks and what that money could be used for. We've seen, you know, members of Congress talk about using that money towards increasing minimum wage. You have investors talking about using the money to raise the debt, to give a special dividend or raise the dividend. Defend the practice for us. Why should these, besides the fact that it's their own money and they can do what they want, why should these companies be doing these record buybacks?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great question. You know, and something that certainly varies from company to company. You know, when you look at the situation of these executives, I think most of them would rather have a better investment opportunity to do rather than a buyback, right? If you're out there and even if your compensation is linked to the stock, if you can get something that, you know, has a 20% ROI versus a buyback that's maybe a 7 or 8% ROI, why would you not pursue that better opportunity? So, you know, I think it's frustration both from the general public, you know, and from company executives that buybacks are really coming down to one of the best uses of capital. You know, there's a few things driving that. One is just, as I mentioned, political volatility. That's happened from, you know, the era of not understanding what's going to happen, you know, in 2013 in terms of interest rates rising, to just global uncertainty, to now the periods of, you know, repealing and enacting major changes in legislation. You know, all of these things make it so that when companies evaluate other investment opportunities, there's a lot more risk there and perhaps a higher hurdle rate that just makes something not worth pursuing. And because of these type of things, that's why you see companies like the buyback, because, you know, they can plan on returning the capital for now, but if something better comes up, they'll simply just reallocate that capital then. And, you know, that's, as I discussed earlier with the dividend, if you do announce a huge increase in your dividend and have to cut it at some point, you know, chances are the stock's probably going to take a pretty big hit when that happens.
Michael Screenover, before we let you go, I don't know if Joel knows this, but you are also a Michigan guy. So give us your prediction here for Michigan in the tournament.
I always have them going all the way. Even if that means I'm not even close to winning the bracket, I'm a loyal fan, and I'll keep it that way.
Yeah, it's tough this year, you know, with Duke. But, yeah, you got to do the obligatory, you know, they win it all just so if it comes down to it, you got some skin in the game. But great information on Bondex.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Mike Schoonover is the Chief Operating Officer of Catalyst Funds. He is the PM of the Catalyst Buyback Strategy Fund. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, thank you. Take care.
All right. Joel, did he just become your favorite guest because of that Michigan comment? I think he did.
Let's see. Oh, no, we don't have favorite guests on this show, Spencer.
Oh, okay.
Every time I say that, Dennis gets mad at me. We all our guests.
All the guests are equal.
Yes, yep. But anybody certainly with the Michigan, you know, definitely has a warm spot in my heart. We'll see. Thursday night, first game against Montana, and I got to dial up Sean Udall. That's where he went to school, so maybe we can get a friendly wager on that one. S&P still hanging out near the highs of the pre-market session, up 10.25 handles, 2850.75. Let's get through that pre-market high here at 2853.
Yeah, balances are small. They're mixed mostly. And there actually is a few selling balances in there too, which is always interesting there. But what I will say is if you're looking for strength this morning, the banks are looking strong here. TLT has rolled over. When we first started, TLT was flat. So I guess the banks were kind of predicting that TLT was going to roll over because it's now down 63 cents. Banks have been strong ever since last night. Although Bank of America did just sneak under $30, I'm just looking at the book, and anybody buying this over 30 last night obviously thought there was news or they didn't respect the book, because there's over 1 million shares for sale at 30, and I would be absolutely shocked if this opened over 30. So when you're buying 30.10, 30.19 last night, got to respect the book, and the people buying last night did not respect the book. In my opinion, I don't think this is opening over 30. I think it could go over 30 today, but I don't think it's opening over 30. I will be covering on the opening print.
All right. That was
jump over just a few other stocks. We had a merger that we did not mention, and it's a small one, but we got JLL going to buy HF.
We do. JLL acquires HF for about $2 billion in cash in stock. I know JLL was halted. I believe it's resumed, though.
It has. Both have resumed. HF is trading up. So this is not much of a premium. When you add it all up, it's given just over $49. Stock is trading up there $49. But remember, this good component of this, over half of it's going to, or approximately half, it looks like it's going to be stock. So it's going to trade off JLL. We'll have to watch what JLL does. But they're not paying a huge premium for this, so I don't know if they're going to beat it up or not. But JLL trading flat here right now, hasn't made a trade here yet this morning, and HF is trading up that takeout price, although I think that's high. Usually you put a little discount on this and almost trade up to the price. So people who are buying at 49.72, I think they're going to be wrong. I think it's probably going to be in the 48s, unless JLL blasts off on this, but I don't see that happening either.
I want to talk about this Google report here, or this report that Google is going to today announce their own streaming game service. I guess if we had known this yesterday, we would have asked Michael Pachter. But yeah, a report from CNBC that Google is going to unveil a streaming game service today. The stock not moving on this. It wouldn't affect the stock now, but I'd be very curious to see if what it does today, if they do announce this sort of, it's apparently going to enable you to stream from any device through which you can also run Google. So,
I mean, I'm just a fan of this company. They have so many irons on the fire. They're getting into everything. I mean, they're going to be involved in e-gaming, probably. You know, they're going to get involved in gaming. We're seeing the streaming now, but e-sports and all this. I mean, Alphabet. And what'd you say, Joel? This was, I don't know if you made this up, but what'd you say on the pre-market show about Alphabet?
The reason they changed their name to Alphabet is because they were going to have a company with a name that started with every letter in the alphabet. I thought I heard that.
I wonder if that's true, but anyways, I hated the name change, but now I kind of like it more because of that. Google's one of the biggest positions in my investment portfolio, and I have no intention of selling this anytime soon. I've said it on the show for the last couple of years. It has got there before. I believe Farah Hamzy's with me on this. I think Google's your most valuable company in the world eventually. And it has been there already. It made it there last year, I believe, near the beginning of the year. But I think if it's, I don't know where it is. It's not that far off right now. But I think Google just, it's a company that does everything right. They're into everything. They have the cash cow, the search engine that can just drive everything. I love the stock long term.
All right, Dennis, another stock long term. I don't want to bring it up, but Neo Atrex wants to know about how you feeling about Tesla.
It's breaking down, and I probably should be selling it here. Had a talk with my wife. I love the idea of Tesla, though, and I think I've somewhat bought it cheap. I'm in from 280, and I think I got to give it some more room. And I said if it broke down through 270, I would sell it. So, and I always say, so this is a cardinal sin on my part. I always say never let trade become an investment. The problem with this is I don't know what it is, and I didn't define it ahead of time. This is why I mess Tesla up all the time, and I don't do well with it because I day traded okay, but whenever I stick it in my long-term portfolio, I'm like, is it a trade? Is it an investment? What is it? And, you know, I let it go a little bit, and yeah, it's down 10 points, but I don't know. I think it's eventually maybe going to go down and test that 250, but I still like the idea of it, so I'm torn here. I don't know what to do on Tesla. Tell me what to do. Should I just take the loss, down 13 points, don't let a trade become an investment? My wife said hold it. She says stop trading your investment portfolio. Well, you've talked about owning Tesla for years. It came down cheap enough. I should just hold on to it. So I'm like, that's a good point. I have been trading my investment portfolio too much. I need to stop trading my long-term portfolio. But I don't know when I put it in there. It went in my long-term portfolio, but I don't know. I kind of had it in my mind that it was going to be a trade, though. So part of me wants to eat the loss here this morning. And then part of me wants to hold it because this is always bounce back.
On one hand, lose a little money in Tesla. On the other hand, have Laura be mad at you. So
if I sell it and it goes down, she'll say she won't be mad at me. But if I sell it, and it goes back up like 350 next year, she's going to be like, man, you got to stop trading that long-term portfolio.
I don't know, I mean, look at
the range here, though. Long term, let's just stop worrying about $10 or $20 on Tesla because it moves $10 a day. This thing has been in a trading range for two years, and every time it got down to the 250 area, it's been a buy. Every time it's got up to the 350 area, it's been a sell. I mean, you're 267, so it's more the buy zone than the sell zone here, but it's come so far. I think you probably do get it at 250. So am I going to sell here and rebuy at 250 and try to, you know, save myself 17 points?
You're not good at that.
It's hard to do on this stock. One headline comes out and it goes back up. I think long term, I'm still a believer in the story here. Long term, I think we've been in a long consolidation period here. Valuation's always been an issue for me. I've talked about the stock multiple times on valuation, and it is scary, and that's why I haven't loaded up in the thing, but I love the story still. And I still think, you know, Gene Munster, this is still one of his things too. I still think, you know, Elon Musk is going to figure this out. I think Tesla's going to be, you know, a $500 stock eventually. So I should just sit on it and not look at it.
Do you think Elon will take on the SEC and win? Okay.
Well, there's the question, too. Okay. I mean, that's the biggest issue. That's what's weighing on the stock. It's always Elon Musk that's weighing on the stock more than anything. I mean, he's, you know, obviously he's called the SEC names in the past. I mean, there's a risk involved. Like, what if they find a way to get this guy in jail? I mean, nobody likes him at the SEC. So if the regulators can find a way to jail this guy, they probably would, and that would be terrible for the stock. So I think that's your risk. And Gene's said that. He said that on CNBC, said it on our show too. I mean, the risk to Tesla is Elon Musk himself. He is the only reason you want to own the stock, but also the reason I don't want to own the stock because I don't know what he's going to say. You don't know what he's going to shoot his mouth off next. That's the risk. So it's all risk-reward. It's kind of balanced here to a certain extent. I just like the story still.
All right.
Well, T-Max says let your wife manage the long-term portfolio. I really can't lose. I mean, if I hold on to this, she gave me the green light. I mean, so if I lose my investment in this, I can blame her.
It's not your fault.
There you go.
Sure, you with a happy wife, happy life, right?
There you go. Spencer, before you wrap things up here, just quick reminder and a quick question. I mean, since everyone is under different names here, we really don't know our demographics here that well. Does anybody here have any children in their household, let's say from 8 to 12 years old? I know Dennis young Spencer is a little bit younger than that. But today at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, Jeremy Newsom and I are going to do Wall Street and Math and Magic. It's a presentation I did for my daughter's sixth grade class. That was nearly 15 years ago. It's just going to be the basics of the stock market. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interactive. Jeremy and I have been working on the presentation. So, going to use show how math is used in Wall Street. So anybody has young kids, we are actually doing it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I'll drop a link in there for you if you got any youngsters in the household. So, Spencer, you want to wrap things up?
I can do that. If you missed any part of today's show, you can catch a podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts, or just watch our show on YouTube.com/BenzingaTV. Thanks to our guest, Michael Schoonover. Thanks to all of you in our chats on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Please remember that all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Everyone have a good rest of your day, and we will see you tomorrow.